Hello, everyone on the call, and to those of you who are listening to this recorded. This is Sustainable Business Friday, and I am Christine Kennedy, one of the Bard MBA students. And this week we have the pleasure of talking to Tom Poulton from Pfizer, and he is the lead for product stewardship and environmental sustainability at Pfizer. And we're really happy to be talking to him. Tom is also a mentor for the Bard C2C Fellows program. And that in maybe Tom can talk a little bit about what that means, or even you, Eben, but he will help students that are doing climate science and climate policy in some of their projects and their work that they're doing through that program. So with that, I would appreciate welcome Tom, and if you want to give a brief overview of who Pfizer is and what you do, and a little bit about yourself as well in that context.
Yeah, and I'll jump in later a little bit about the C2C Fellows program, Tom. I know we haven't gotten too involved in that yet, so I'm glad to fill folks in about that. But over to you, Tom. Yeah.
Terrific. So thanks for having me here. I really appreciate it. What I was thinking about doing, and again, I'm open to your suggestions, Christina and others, but I thought I'd give a brief introduction to who Pfizer is, what we do, and how sustainability plays a role of that. My role at Pfizer in terms of product stewardship and environmental sustainability. How I came to this role, if that's of interest to the students, and what my ongoing relationship is with sustainability. And then I'll be glad to go into the details of our program, but Christina and others, feel free to ask questions as we go along. I'm certainly open to that, but I hope that meets the needs of these Sustainability Fridays.
Absolutely, and actually how you came to the role is fascinating for those of us who are trying to get into careers in sustainability and stewardship. So that is really helpful to us as students and probably to some of the audience out there.
Terrific. So just in case folks aren't familiar with Pfizer, we are a research-based pharmaceutical manufacturer. We're basically divided into five core businesses, an innovative products business that makes patented medicine products, many of which you're likely to be familiar with, Celebrex, Enbrel, Lyrica, Viagra. We have a large oncology business, which is rapidly growing as we try to find new products to fight cancer. Some of the more better-known products in that area are Sutent and Xalkori. We have a large vaccines business, which brings in other issues as well. Prevnar is one of the largest vaccines out there for pneumococcal viruses, and that's a major product in that area. So beyond the patented products, we have a large established products business, and as I talk more about sustainability, that's an area of differentiation and opportunity as we get into the generic space and how we as a responsible manufacturer have the opportunity to differentiate ourselves through sustainability. But those products that have lost patent include Zoloft, Zithromax, Lipitor, and those are now being handled by that established products business. And then lastly, we have a large consumer healthcare business. And if you go into the shelves of your local pharmacy, you'll notice Centrum, Advil, Chapstick, Emergency that are part of the brands of that, as well as a new RX-OTC product that's coming about, in which we'll be bringing Nexium to that marketplace as well. So we have 56 manufacturing plants around the world, operate in 175 markets. We have multiple hundreds of research and development institutions that we partner with, and all of that is what makes up Pfizer. In terms of my role, I do lead the product stewardship program, and I've always been in the environmental health and safety organization. I wanted to be in New York for a summer, so I was a summer intern in graduate school. I applied to all the companies I could find in New York City, and Pfizer took me on as a summer intern. And that was 31 years ago. So I've obviously been here a while and have seen lots of changes around the company, but began focused on employee health and safety. I went to graduate school studying industrial hygiene and safety from the Department of Environmental Health Sciences at the Harvard School of Public Health. And came on, as I say, as a summer intern and stayed on as part of the global EHS organization, and have led many areas from process safety to audit programs to the broader health and safety team. So about 5 years ago, though, we restructured our organization in which we combined the areas of occupational toxicology, environmental toxicology, the hazard characterization functions towards sharing information with our employees and our customers, and we established this product stewardship organization. And so that product stewardship organization really looked at the environmental impact of our products, everywhere from informing the characterization at our suppliers to the end-of-life disposal of our products. And so that concept of product stewardship became a material issue of when we launched our environmental sustainability program about 5 years ago. And as we developed that area and as folks transitioned, I took leadership of the overall environmental sustainability program. Although I lead that program, I don't have any staff directly related to environmental sustainability. I have folks that work on green chemistry and other aspects, but it really is a matter of partnership and influence across the organization. We've established an environmental sustainability council that includes representatives from our business units. It includes our corporate responsibility folks that handle more of the social sustainability side. It includes our engineering folks that lead and champion our energy and climate change initiatives. It includes our water lead, our waste lead from the environmental side. It includes public policy folks, environmental folks, and a variety of disciplines such as that provide a continuity throughout the organization around what are the opportunities and issues associated with environmental sustainability. So just to give you some of the background on our, as we call it, our Green Journey program, while I mentioned that the environmental sustainability program as a unified effort has been about 4 or 5 years, we have had a long history in terms of energy and climate change and in terms of green chemistry initiatives that become core elements of our sustainability opportunities. In the energy and climate change area, we've probably had a program for more than 10 years. We've been able to retire 2 public goals to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 20%, so cumulatively probably 35% or so of our greenhouse gas emissions. That's a mixture of renewable major projects like a wind turbine in Belgium, a variety of photovoltaic installations, but really it's hundreds of small, well, literally 1,500, more than 1,500 projects during our last five-year goal of small-scale energy efficiency opportunities, some initiated locally by colleagues willing to come up with opportunities to turn off lights, shut down equipment, low-cost ideas to help make that happen to those large-scale projects of capital intensive. But all in all, those projects have tremendous payback as the energy efficiency returns are tremendous, and as well as having those environmental benefits. We also have had, as I say, a long initiative and effort around green chemistry. So that's the idea of, can we eliminate hazardous solvents? Can we apply the principles of green chemistry to find different routes to manufacture our products? And we've done quite a bit in that space as well. We've been able to, on 2 of our major high-volume processes, we've been able to implement enzymatic chemistry to replace solvent-based chemistry for many of the steps of those synthesis of those products. And that has tremendous returns in terms of the environmental reductions. There are financial benefits in many of those cases as well. But it's that kind of innovative technologies of bringing that to the business that does yield some tremendous opportunities for us. Looking forward, we now have a new set of 2020 sustainability targets, environmental sustainability targets. We're looking at an ongoing 20% reduction again in our greenhouse gas emissions from our 2012 baseline. And reaching that for a third time will be quite challenging. We don't have it fully mapped out. It may take some transformational thinking. The low-hanging fruit in many cases has been taken, and yet we feel there is an opportunity for us to continue this effort, particularly as we look towards the targets of climate change and keeping these as science-based targets for our efforts. We hope that by reaching this level, we continue to manage the climate change risk, at least our contribution to that. We've also added for the first time as a public goals to reduce our waste generated by 15% over that time period and goals to reduce water by 5%. And admittedly, again, these are challenging goals for us in many cases because we are consolidating processes. We are trying to maximize the utilization of our manufacturing sites. So in the midst of bringing on more processes, are we still maintaining that efficiency? But these are absolute goals, and it may be difficult to achieve these, even though we are making strides in our efficiency. If we consolidate sites at fewer sites that are more heavily loaded, these goals become more challenging. I'm glad to continue on with the program. Should I pause here and just
give the I have a question. Yeah,
sure.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's amazing work, and as a chemical engineer, to me it's always interesting to hear what's going on. A couple of questions. As you mentioned, so the third time around with the greenhouse gas and waste reduction and water, and you've sort of done the small eco-efficiency, energy efficiency projects, and that's great because it's really engaging to employees to be involved with that. So there's two things. One is, you know, how do you keep that momentum and, you know, how much more efficiency can you pull out of your process and are there bigger things that you're thinking of doing that you can share with us? And the second is, because it's science-based, how do you, and I know on your website that you have KPIs around this process and you have some metrics around how you're doing it, what is the work like to try to collect that information and understand the metrics and how, you know, is that part of the role of your team or is that something that happens in a different part of the business?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I talk first to maintaining the momentum, is that, and then I'll talk to the KPIs?
Yes, that sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, so in terms of maintaining the momentum, it is challenging. I mean, capital is restricted right now, but these are seven-year goals, and we do have to map that out and try and identify what are the priorities that we want to really push for. Where can sustainability make a difference in a project as we start to evaluate not just the financial, but is there a green benefit that may tip a project? It is certainly part of our forward-looking thinking, and as I say, we don't fully have it mapped out to identify all of the projects that will be able to contribute to that or the timing of some of those projects, but we're at the phase to try and bring forward what are the ones we really need to advance, and that's key. But in terms of maintaining momentum, you raised a really good point about sustainability is engaging to employees, and we are trying to leverage upon that where we can. So one of the things we have going on right now in our New York office is that we put together an exhibition of 30 panels around our sustainability program in six phases from about a sustainability culture and examples of our sites that have done that to examples of resource conservation efforts or water conservation efforts, energy and climate change initiatives, external work that we've done in communities, but also that effort around around what every employee can do. We do find that sustainability is kind of a grassroots initiative, that it's interesting that sometimes when I do presentations to groups of employees, and I'll talk about these grand and glorious goals that we meet and the achievements or the external ratings that we get from organizations, they'll say, well, that's fine, but why do I see so much paper printed? Why do I see the lights on when I come by on weekends? Why do I, is the paper really recycled when I put it in my waste basket? So sustainability is a local initiative as well, and engaging employees in that is a great opportunity. So one of the things we've done out of the exhibition is to have employees give us their ID badges on an electronic system so that we can identify themselves and say, do you want to just be – it's great that you're now aware of our efforts. Do you want to be more informed about our efforts as we go on, or do you actually want to move to the next level of being a catalyst for further change and how we can seek to those opportunities to involve you in ongoing efforts? So does that give you a good sense of how you may still build that green community?
That's great.
And we are trying to build on to that, how we communicate, provide websites, what every employee could do. And one of the great examples we had that we showcased in the exhibition was a sales representative in Canada who said, I live in a home that has photovoltaics. I drive an electric car. What do I do for sustainability? And he did share with us that what he sponsors meeting with physicians, which we do with our field force, he tries to look at the dishes and silverware aren't plastic and discarded after the meeting, but can be reused. So it is that concept of what we call around here of owning it that we see as a part of the culture that our CEO is trying to build, where folks can own sustainability as well. And in terms of our KPIs, it is owned by different people, but we do try and roll up those metrics, and they are challenging, but we do believe that we have been able to put them forward in our annual review next to our financial metrics as well, and to share the data itself. And again, these are absolute numbers, and we may have to, in the future, explain some years they may end up going up because of that site utilization, but the fact that we track it, we believe, is an important part, and the fact that we're heading hopefully in the right direction in terms of improving efficiency. Is that the detail you're looking for, or was there further detail about what parts of the organization that you're interested in as well?
No, that's great. It's a good summary. So one of the things that you mentioned is about having, that you mentioned to us, is moving from just your site, Pfizer's site, and expanding that to sort of further into the value chain, so suppliers and customers. And we're seeing this with more and more large manufacturers and corporations that are saying, hey, our gates are great, but, you know, we're really part of a bigger ecosystem. And so just to explain a little bit about what you're doing, and I'm wondering if that's part of the Environmental Sustainability Council you mentioned.
So we have what we call five platforms. Well, we have three pillars in our sustainability program. We know what we want to deliver, and I highlighted them in the terms of our 2020 targets. It's around our energy and climate change greenhouse gas footprint. It's around our waste generated. It's around our water usage. So that's what we want to deliver. Where we struggled or needed greater detail in that first year was how we deliver that, and we've established what we call five platforms for the delivery, and so that includes what we do, what we call plants. They all begin with a P, so they're easy to memorize, but they're not exactly accurate in what they're describing. So plants means all of our internal operations, whether that's our manufacturing plants or our research operations or our offices, but we're looking to what we can do to improve the efficiency of our plants, reduce the metrics that we highlighted. We have a second platform, which gets to your question, around partners, and that includes our procurement organization and our external manufacturing. So procurement is the goods and services that we buy from others. The external manufacturing is our contractual relationship to manufacture a product on our behalf. And we have engaged and formed a council, a sub-council, to address those issues to try and gather some of that, evaluate that Scope 3 impact, which is difficult because this is an area that's constantly changing. So our measurements aren't as reliable there, but we do want to advance the program there. So we have criteria that we're looking at where we work with those partners, as we say, to help understand where they're at today, to help move them along through the evolution of their program, to establishing a policy, having a code of conduct towards advancing towards baseline measurements of their footprint, towards reductions in their footprint. And it's a continuum, but we're helping to support that. We've done capacity building with some of our partners, and we've done this assessment as well to see where we need to prioritize. But we also see it upstream, too, with our customers. Just as we're asking our suppliers about their environmental footprint, we're getting customers who are asking ourselves. I mean, the most well-known that folks will see is Walmart. And as I say, we have a big consumer products business, consumer health products business, that Walmart is asking us about our program. And so how do we partner? But that's not the only one. We see hospitals, governmental agencies that are starting to build environmental criteria into some of their tendering processes and others. We look to distinguish ourselves in that opportunity.
This is Eben Goodstein jumping back in here. And folks, if you're joining us here on Sustainable Business Fridays, sponsored by the BARD MBA in Sustainability, and we're having a conversation today about Pfizer's Green Journey with Tom Poulton, who's the Senior Director of Product Stewardship and Global Environmental Health and Safety at Pfizer. Tom, I was really interested in this Environmental Sustainability Council. This is really kind of sounds like a really interesting initiative that's cross-cutting. How frequently does it meet? How does it operate? I mean, does it operate through subcommittees? Sort of what's the – it obviously is responsible for owning, if not setting, those company-wide goals. I'm curious to know how that council operates.
Sure. So each of those kinds of program leads, the technical leads, are a major portion of that council. As I say, the technical leads for air, water, waste, the platform leads, so folks from our procurement operations. But those are the doers. We do have some of the strategic members as well that can weigh into, are we on the right sustainability strategy? We meet on a quarterly basis. And to date, the group, there are folks on that team that live and breathe sustainability on a daily basis, and they are well briefed and have their hands on what are kinds of the key trends and key opportunities. And then there are folks, they get involved in sustainability once a quarter when they come to our council meeting. So we do try and bring in outside folks that can help educate our business contacts and others around emerging issues in sustainability, whether that's investor inquiries, the Walmart program around conducting a sustainability index, product-based sustainability index. We've brought in folks from a green hospital association to meet with us and talk about their criteria for buying products and their activities around establishing sustainability trends in hospitals. And so these folks then become informed and become a conduit within their organizations, hopefully distributing some of the information that we generate and definitely providing us with business context. They're less of that strategic approval body for our public goals. Those go through a different channel through our EHS steering team. But the lead of the council is a VP of manufacturing responsible for relations between the business manufacturing and the commercial side, and she's a just a highly passionate individual around sustainability and a great advocate for the program. The lead of the vice president of environmental health and safety also sits on the council. And our sponsor as a council is a board of director member. We're on our third one, so we've been able to move around. But it's sometimes the president of manufacturing. It's been our CFO during one period as well. And so that's our opportunity to receive to get that involvement with senior leadership as well.
So
does that help you?
There's a board member and typically a C-suite member sort of involved in at some level.
As the sponsor, correct, with briefings and communications to them.
Okay. Typically, how many people come to those meetings? I'm kind of curious in a big company like Pfizer.
Yeah, so the council membership is roughly 12 folks. Probably a little bit more than that, probably about 15 folks, and most attend. What we started doing just this year was, as I said, we bring in outside speakers around a sustainability topic. And so we've just started with our meeting 2 weeks ago for the first quarter to invite via WebEx anyone in the organization who that topic may be relevant. So we asked our council members to send out an invitation to that portion of our session. So one part may be around the progress of the program and discussion there, and the second part may be around this external perspective. And so that we opened up, and the last one was around digital strategy. We were fortunate to have somebody who joined us from previously worked at Seventh Generation, so be able to bring a perspective of how digital strategy was applied to a sustainability line of products, mm-hmm. and to advance our thinking around that.
Very cool. So this is Sustainable Business Fridays, and we're speaking with Tom Holton, Director of Product Stewardship, Global Environmental Health and Safety Advisor. I wanted to let folks know that at the end of April, the last Friday in April, we'll be talking with Gina Wurtenberg, who is the author of Building a Culture for Sustainability, People, Planet, and Profits in a New Green Economy. She's also teaching our employees and organizations class in our MBA in Sustainability. If you'd like more information about the MBA in Sustainability, please drop us an email at mba@bard.edu. We've got two students, Rochelle March and Christine Kennedy, on the line. Christine, back over to you guys for more questions.
Thank you so much, Evan. This is Rochelle, one of the co-hosts on the Sustainable Business Fridays. Tom, I have a question for you. Last year, as part of my BARD coursework, I actually did a presentation on pharmaceutical wastewater. And it turns out that about over 50% of the U.S. population actually has a prescription, and about 10% have 5 prescriptions or more. And the residue from this is secreted into the water supply. So if you could talk a little bit more about your Pharmaceuticals in the Environment program, PI program, which deals with this issue.
Sure. So largely what you're talking about is related to the unmetabolized medicines that are taken by patients that continue on. And that is part of the FDA or European authorities review to look at a product and to assess that impact as part of an environmental risk assessment is part of an FDA process. And so, you know, certainly we have an active program to engage in that aspect as part of our submissions, and that is an evaluation that's conducted for any of our new drug applications that go through. We also have a program to look at our manufacturing sites, too, and part of the efforts. We have a testing program for our manufacturing sites to look at, is there additional data besides what we generate, ERAs that's needed from our manufacturing and treatability aspects of those compounds. We have recommended practices in place to control the handling of those materials to avoid environmental impacts. We have a standard in place that applies to that, and we've done targeted assessments for compounds of concern at our manufacturing sites as well to focus in on that issue. Does that help?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it sounds like you participate in beyond compliance measures versus just what the FDA requires from you. And can you give me maybe a specific example of how you you did these assessments and had certain standards in place? How do you, does it translate anything along the value chain to the, your customers as well?
Sure. So first of all, you know, a lot of this work may involve like a desktop kind of assessment of evaluation of how much material is could be potentially discharged as you wash a tank or something like that, and then is that treated to what efficiency is it? Then is there an issue at the aquatic side as part of that assessment? And if we feel that the desktop triggers something, we might follow up with additional studies to evaluate that. And in terms of it translating additionally up the value chain. And by the way, this is part of product stewardship. It's exactly what you're describing. And that is our connection to environmental sustainability. In terms of that effort along the value chain, you know, we certainly have hospitals and others that are required to discard of the expired or unwanted medicines that they may be handling. We've worked with our business units to sponsor a project leveraging a waste management database that characterizes each of the environmental disposal practices in the U.S. that would be required by the category of product. So we call it the Responsible Disposal Advisor, and we've put that on a website intended for healthcare professionals in the United States to advise pharmacies, hospitals, and other organizations that do encounter requirements to manage these wastes under RCRA or other environmental regulations. But they're very confusing as to which products would fall under which categories, so we feel it's important to make that easier to help them understand which ones should be handled in which way. It also improves their cost efficiency on the handling of those wastes, because if you were to treat everything as a hazardous waste, it might raise their disposal costs 5-10 times. So we think it's a service to help them identify which ones they would want to handle in a compliant and responsible way and to advise them of that.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that. I also have one more question about that waste management. One of the issues with the FDA is often they test for toxicity or bad effects individually for each compound, but not synergistically, because of the extra cost and the complexity of that kind of testing. Does Pfizer take that into account at all in terms of the pharmaceutical waste? So how will it react with other compounds and pharmaceuticals once it's into the wastewater?
That, quite honestly, I'm not sure of the challenges there. I don't believe we do anything special for a synergistic kind of analysis. It's quite challenging, but again, the risk assessment process that we put our products through should be sufficient. And again, there is while these are detectable, I will admit that there are levels that are detectable. There is from a variety of organizations indicating that these trace levels are not believed to be hazardous to humans and present those kinds of effects. So that's been well established by our statements by a variety of organizations around that.
And there's constant surveillance to track the effects of these compounds and their intensity.
There is certainly intense focus in a variety of jurisdictions around the world around these compounds there's certainly some regulations and things that are advancing within Europe. But, you know, again, we're hoping to look for more proactive kinds of measures rather than a regulatory restrictions of by compound by compound. One of the things that we apply to patient safety is this concept of pharmacovigilance that we monitor our patients and report adverse health effects. And could those kinds of models be built for what they call eco-pharmacovigilance, to establish those kinds of monitoring for Sentinel kinds of events as a more cost-effective and more appropriate way to identify these incidents early on and address them, rather than the treatability, upgrading the entire water treatment infrastructure across the globe, which may be impractical and possibly unwarranted.
Sure. Thank you so much, Tom.
Good questions, though.
Thanks, Michelle. I have a question. I noticed also that Pfizer has specific initiatives based on the Millennium Development Goals. I don't know if that's under your purview, but if you want to talk a little bit about, you know, how you see your interaction for those and also moving to whatever is the next generation goals. I see a lot about vaccination and also, you know, primary education, which I'm particularly interested in educating girls, particularly as a science organization. So if you can speak to that a little bit, and then I think we can open it up to questions from the rest, other members of the call.
Yeah, indeed. And if you would like to ask Tom a question, please hit 5-star on your phone. 5-star on your phone. Thank you.
So, quite frankly, there's a distinction between our social responsibility and our corporate responsibility program and our environmental responsibility, our environmental sustainability program. We certainly collaborate and coordinate in terms of millennial goals and other kinds of initiatives around that, certainly around efforts of the UN Global Compact and others, the energy initiatives in the UN. But quite frankly, the millennial goals and the social side, it would be best to speak with our corporate responsibility folks rather than would be inappropriate for me to really address those questions.
Completely understood. That's why, you know, I just didn't know whether that was part of your purview or not. But it's interesting that maybe, you know, as we're expanding these medicines into other parts of the world that may not have the systems in place, like the FDA or regulations in the EU, what that will mean for from in product stewardship and environment. So,
and certainly from an environmental aspect, again, that ties into our product stewardship. We are concerned about the issues that can be associated with our products in those areas and the environmental impact that they have, and that is something that we have to focus in on and have efforts to collaborate with our business partners and even to differentiate ourselves. Can we offer, as part of a vaccination process, the opportunity to provide waste counseling and waste support as part of that service, along with the delivery of the medicine?
Great. If your phone number is 212-249-0918, you're live. You can ask Tom a question.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thanks for doing this. I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on your water initiative that you have, your reduction, because I was impressed by that in general with water shortages sort of, you know, becoming more and more important throughout the world. Do you think that differentiates your company just in terms of what the overall pharmaceutical industry is doing, not just in terms of, like, wastewater treatment, but just even basic access to water in the future? And I was just also curious if members of, you know, your finance, you know, and your operations are also looking at that, just because in years to come that could be a big issue for a lot of industries. Thanks.
No problem. I'm sorry. I didn't get your name at all, and but I'm certainly glad to answer.
Thanks. I'm Cindy Motes, and I'm a former recent graduate of Harvard's Environmental Management and Sustainability Program. Thanks.
Oh, that's great. That's terrific. So, sure, water is definitely a risk issue in the future. It's certainly something that we need to focus on even today, and we do have this water effort, and we have been working to map the water scarcity issues for our internal sites and for our external manufacturers. It's becoming certainly one of the considerations in when we conduct external manufacturing operations. Is that an area where we should be focused in on the sustainability resource issues? Can this site that we're contracting with support our operations. And we have had challenges at various points in our internal operations, helping us to recognize that water is a key resource that we need to be able to manage. Now, there are other jurisdictions around the world where it's difficult to advance water conservation initiatives. It's viewed as a plentiful resource and in some ways unlimited, but we know that that's still a challenge, and we are really drawing attention. That's part of having water as one of those three public goals, is to be able to say this is an area that we need to focus in on, even though there may not always be economic advantages towards conservation projects. But so we certainly have tied it to our scarcity and our risk issues. We are seeking opportunities. And it is quite amazing when you do focus in on water, what you get for results. So we had a site a couple of years ago that challenged itself to say, let's set a grand and glorious goal of, I think it was even 30% reduction in their water usage. What would that mean? And when they looked at that, they found that they could reduce cleaning times and there were productivity outputs from just that they were able to achieve just by that focus on water. So we've had sites that have come up with eliminating water from cleaning and coming with dry technologies. We've had just really nice outcomes in a variety of areas. It is an important focus. And also, it's a key resource and a costly resource for us to purify water, so we do have to be very conscious of being as efficient as possible, since that does play an important role.
Tom, I want to congratulate Pfizer on sort of adopting this idea of science-based goals around carbon reduction. Andrew Winston's new book that's just out, The Big Pivot, really lays that out as kind of a foundational dimension of what sustainability needs to be about.
He was in on Monday with us.
I'm sorry?
He was in here on Monday meeting with us. And so I had to buy his book on Monday night.
Super. Yeah, it's in the cover story of the Harvard Business Review this week as well. So it's out there. What about sort of the other pieces that Andrew talks about? I mean, I've a lot of conversation about resource efficiency and finding kind of financial and environmental synergies there. You know, as a business, do you think that sustainability offers Pfizer anything from a point of view of kind of driving product innovation? Is there any way that sustainability is going to be a top-line benefit for Pfizer?
I definitely see the future as the opportunity for it to be a top-line benefit. For instance, the French Hospital Association has 33 questions that they ask us about our sustainability program as part of their tender, and that's weighted, we're told, but 15% in that overall offer of their decision-making. We're proud to say that we've gotten an A-plus the past 2 years in that rating, and only about 5% of the companies get that. And that includes across the board, not just pharmaceutical purchases, but maybe all of the materials that they purchase as a hospital association. We've had discussions around in Sweden, where there's a high environmental consciousness, to offer incentive as part of the scheme. Right now they have a vigorous tendering process that rewards the cheapest product. And it's on a monthly bidding process. And we're wondering if we're the greener product, would they be able to offer an incentive? And they do have a national pharmaceutical strategy which speaks to economic incentives. And we've worked with the trade association in Sweden to try and put forth a proposal of how you may be able to identify the greener product. And we aren't intending this to be the route that physicians should select their treatment for patients. We do believe it should be based upon therapeutic intention. But if you've got a generic product on which the active ingredient is the same, essentially, and you're only looking at price, you may not be paying the full price for making of that compound because of environmental controls and other kinds of situations, other externalities. So we do see that as an opportunity to promote the green, the top line growth in our industry.
Could you speak to kind of for upcoming, you know, MBA students who are studying and thinking about graduates and jobs, what do you see as the future of people coming out of graduate school with a skill set that combines basic business literacy with kind of with a sustainability vision? Where are those people going to work?
Great question. So I do think that business core competency and acumen is extremely helpful. I mean, what we've been talking about is making a business case for why these are opportunities for the company to go ahead. There is certainly a desire to enhance reputation, to be a good citizen, to gain that respect from society, but articulating that overall business case, whether I say it's these creative models of factoring in these externalities, is an important opportunity. I do think the more skills you have, whether it's those technical capabilities, whether it's those abilities to articulate a business case, all of that helps the communication skills, the ability to influence and articulate the direction, all of which will help. The more of those skills you have, I think the better positioned you are. Is that fair?
Terrific. Christine, Rochelle, back to you guys. Any additional questions? End of the
Sure. I have one about going back to green chemistry. Tom, for those listeners who are not as familiar, would you briefly describe what makes green chemistry more environmental, have more benefits for the environment versus regular chemistry? And in your opinion, what do you see the future of green chemistry in the next 5 or 10 years as environmental issues become more of public importance?
So as I say, we've had a tremendous program. We do believe it offers tremendous sense for those folks that are on the phone. There's a variety of principles that have been laid out around them, and I won't go through all of them, but it is the use of less intense chemistry that does avoid toxic materials, looking for alternative processes and the opportunities there. Where we do see the intersection of the carbon footprint of a process intersecting with green chemistry in the future, we do see we've worked on an initiative. We have a lead in green chemistry, Pete Dunn, who's a developmental background and as a developmental chemist, a brilliant chemist who's been able to lead much of this effort and has taken written papers about it and directed our strategy for this. And so where we do see is that opportunity of that intersection between choosing incorporating some of the carbon footprinting screening practices into our alternatives for new syntheses, but even, as I say, finding alternative ways of making our products that in some cases don't involve solvents at all. Or going to different technologies that have continuous manufacturing rather than large tanks that are more energy intensive, more chemical intensive. There are other technologies that can be brought in. The future of the pharmaceutical industry is largely around biotherapeutics. So it does bring back to the water issue again, because one of the key ingredients for biotherapeutic processes and fermentation processes is water, so it does create some sensitivity there. And it is about us looking, part of the future-looking strategy is bringing those sustainable science principles beyond just a green chemistry, but what are the sustainable science focuses that we need to look at in the manufacturing of our products, and how we may be able to take advantage of those trends and technologies as alternatives to make it. And the other, quite frankly, trend in the industry, which is has some sustainability benefit, we don't expect to see on scale those blockbuster kinds of everybody takes medicines for many therapies the way we saw with Lipitor, for instance. But you may see more targeted medicines, which we see in the oncology field. That concept of personalized medicines, the oncology drug that's right for you may not be right for me because of genetic profile. So that then requires smaller batches because there isn't as the volume of or in demand, but they may be more potent too, which is why you go to smaller batches. So that concept of smaller batches is less energy intensive in many cases, and therefore there are some sustainability benefits there too, that potentially. The other part is some of the catalysts and precious metals that we use. We're seeing some technologies around that get us away from palladium or platinum, and those are emerging, and we're researching new processes that take advantage of different metals for those products. Does that help?
Yes, thank you so much. Prior to going to Bard Center for Environmental Policy, I actually worked in cancer research at Weill Cornell, and we worked with oncology customized medicine. So that's interesting to see that that's a definite trend in all pharmaceutical areas. Thank you.
Well, I think we're coming to the end of the hour, and Tom, I wanted to let you have the last word on a big question, but I do want to remind folks that we're going to have Gina Wurtenberg talking about her book, Building a Culture of Sustainability, towards the end of the month, the last Friday in April. And if you'd like more information about the programs here at Bard or about the Sustainable Business Friday series, please drop us an email at mba@bard.edu. And I want to thank Christine Kennedy and Rochelle March for leading the student conversation here. They're both students in our MBA program. So, Tom, just kind of a big picture question is, where do you see corporate sustainability going in the next 5 years? Has kind of interest plateaued or peaked, or is it accelerating? What is your sense on the ground in terms of, you know, this idea that companies can really not only be good corporate citizens in terms of what they're doing, but actually find important synergies that allow them to solve big environmental and social problems and make money doing so. So where do you see this going?
Sure. Well, I do think, as you say, it is here to stay. It is evolving. I do think there is an evolutionary process in organizations. I do think it starts with those kinds of eco-efficiency opportunities. One of the other acronyms we utilize around here is Pfizer Cares about the environment. And by cares, what we talk about is customer advantages. And I think that's where the next trend is. People aren't, for the most part, aren't willing to pay extra, in particularly for medicines and things like that. There are some consumer products and that we do see people pay extra for a greener product. But can you provide that customer with an advantage through environmental efficiency? Discard the waste that they're handling, or minimize the refrigeration that they need for a new medicine. Being able to provide customer advantages is an enormous opportunity that needs to be focused. So that's the CA. And the R that we use is around responsible manufacturing. We do believe that that's what can differentiate ourselves, and I do think that that's part of the trend that we have to see. People want responsible manufacturing. They want that reliability, and that may be how they ask for it. As I often say, my relatives don't ask me, should I buy this medicine, is it green enough? But they will say, is it safe for me to take the generic? And that responsible manufacturing is a core component that ties into that differentiation and that opportunity, and the core part of what needs to stay. The E is around efficient operations, and that is where many companies start in their sustainability journey. Can the sustainability program improve their efficiency, utilize less materials decrease their disposal costs. But the program needs to advance beyond that. And then the last one, the last letter in that is the ask for stewardship, and it's addressing the issues of concern out there among folks, whether if you're making a plastic bottle, are you eliminating BPA as one of those constituents of concern? Are you looking to incorporate recycled content if that's where the opportunity exists? So I do think that's taking folks through the evolution is where I see the field heading of going beyond just efficiency, getting folks that demand the product to be greener, to demand the cheapest product plus green, that they aren't necessarily willing to pay for it, but it is a core part of the differentiator between one product versus another. So,
that's a note on which to end. So thank you very much. Thanks, Christine and Rochelle as well. Really appreciate your taking the time to talk with us, our students, and our audience.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tom.
And I am, you know, William, folks, feel free to reach out, certainly on LinkedIn. If I don't get to you immediately, understand I won't take offense if you reach back out to me again a second time or whatever, but I'm certainly willing to offer whatever I can.
All righty. Terrific. Good to speak with you.
Thank you
again, everybody. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.